Becoming Terran. Chapter 1. Foundlings. The sky was a hard, hot blue, with nothing more than a faint haze on the horizon, the air dry and dusty to match, and the grass around the hotel brown in patches, the water supply having been irregular for weeks. The young Fulani woman stood near the locked chain-link fence, looking across the fields to the distant hills, and smelled the occasional stink of the oil pump jacks from the fields. Her sister, 5 years younger, had been brought out with the other laundry workers, and the girl held on to her, trying to be brave, only the occasional sniffle revealing her fear. Behind them the crowd, a few oil field workers scattered among the rest of the hotel staff, stood closer to the building. They smelled of sweat, and fear as well, the occasional burst of gunfire echoing in the air. Rebel troops had come in, first thing in the morning, having taken the oil field and the services as well as the hotel, herded them all together and out, locked them into the fenced area, then ignored them. They had been standing or sitting for hours, and the North African sun was hot, even in winter. The shooting quieted down late in the morning. Another few hours, and she saw a white man being shown around by one of the rebel officers, and was flanked by another white man and an Asian, clearly with him, and a rebel trooper. His clean, dark hair was neatly cut over a thin face with a pencil mustache, a face that was neither kind nor gentle, with hardness in every line. They came close, and the rebel officer pointed at the people behind the fence. "What shall we do with them?" She had seen men in the hotel who were hard, who had let greed lead them to accept offers they should not have, and took a chance. She stepped to the fence, leaving her sister behind. "Please, monsieur, water, toilet?" The man looked at her dismissively, began to turn back to the rebel officer, then did a double take and stared at her, a tall, slender African woman with a classical oval face and high cheekbones. Finally, in badly accented French, he said, "You can pee in the dirt." He didn't move. Staring back, she realized that she had only once or twice seen someone dressed in clothes that fit so perfectly, and both of them were important people. With that, she bent and reached under her hotel uniform skirt, pulled down her panties and dropped them, stepping out carefully. Then, carefully, deliberately, she pulled up her skirt, exposing herself to him and incidentally to the men around him, thrust her pelvis forward, and pissed through the fence, forming a crude heart in the sandy ground, then let her skirt fall back to her knees. There was some murmuring behind her, but the man ignored the officer, the rest of the crowd, and kept staring through her performance. Finally, a minute or two later, he broke eye contact with a clear effort. "Get the hotel people back in. They'll be needed. Secure the oil field workers," he told the officers. "Clean her up and bring her to me in the hotel office." 2 hours later, dressed in a businesswoman's suit found in a suitcase from the check room, she was led into the office. It was not a large room, with only enough space for the desk and a couple of guest chairs. The walls were tan, with heavy beige curtains cutting the brightness of the sunlight flowing in the windows. "You can go," he said to the Asian man who had brought her in. The Asian stepped out, shutting the door behind him, cutting off the view of her sister sitting on the couch outside. He stared at her for a while, running a finger over his phone as she stood in front of the desk, his look more than stripping her naked. Finally, he asked, "How old are you?"
20, monsieur.
"And you are a maid at this hotel. They have started me working in accounting. You're 18, if that. Any other family here?"
"Only my sister. Our maman died in the virus that came through a few months ago, along with some of the oil field guards and hotel staff."
"You and the brat didn't go home."
"The staffing company for the hotel told us we needed to work another year to make the money to go home."
He nodded. "You service anyone the hotel tells you to?"
Her features grew cold and immobile, and she looked far older than her age. "No, monsieur. They only offered me twice, and I only serviced one, someone close to the owner of the refinery." His stare had become like a spotlight. "How does the hotel see you other than this?" She changed her whole body language. "Why, monsieur, I am just a young woman from Niger, without much education, who can certainly be useful if the tasks assigned me are not too complicated," she said, pretending to have trouble with the longer words. He broke up, laughing. "What's your name?" she told him, and he replied, "Too hard for me. You'll be Francoise. You'll address me in public as Monsieur Tolliver, and in private as Philippe." She looked at him, and he added, "Oh yes, you're hired. I'll buy out your contract. We'll find something to do with your sister. School, maybe. If she's anything like you, she could be useful in a few years. In the meantime, we'll get you a wardrobe, and you'll be introduced as an assistant. You will use that other personality, the simple girl from Niger, and will give me reports on what you overhear. Understood?" "Oui, monsieur. Of course, the first report I should give you is that your French accent is terrible, and French speakers probably laugh at you behind your back." His mouth fell open. He closed it and rose, nodding, and came around the desk. "By damn, you just earned a raise. You'll give me lessons then." She nodded, and then he slapped her face hard. "You will never be insubordinate." She stood, cheek red through the dark brown, showing no emotion. "Oui, Philippe." Later, when now Francoise and her sister, who was to be called Amelie, were alone in one of the hotel rooms near the office, the girl looked at her. "What you did today... Years ago, I told you that you should not remember Papa striking Maman, only good times. You should not remember this, either. Just remember, I am always on your side, and will do whatever I can for you." Amelie looked at her for a few minutes, then asked, "But who is on your side?" Francois's face grew harder. "Every chain has an end. For this one, I must be there for me. I must stand up to the world, as hard a place as it is." She held out her arms, and her sister came close. And she leaned over and held her close, keeping her warm in the coolness of the hotel.